I had early challenges from the get-go saying, this is never going to work.
It's a new world for business.
It was quite daunting.
A world that's changing every day.
It's quite a harsh term.
And to survive, businesses are encouraged to boldly embrace new technologies, new business models, and new ideas.
To this day, it's one of the most solid things I've done.
Bold Businesses, a podcast series about the bold embracing the new.
I wish I had that back then.
Powered by Vodafone.
Hello, I'm Cara Waters and I'm the Small Business Editor at The Age and Sydney Morning Herald. And this is the second season of the Bold Businesses podcast, powered by Vodafone. In my career, I've spoken to thousands of small business owners. And this season, I'm really excited to be speaking to six bold businesses. We've got a gift store that sells sushi you can sit on, a live streaming sports business, and even a mortgage broker with a passion for fashion. We'll hear about their successes and the things that keep them up at night. And we'll be getting advice along the way from experts in social media, digital branding, cybersecurity, and management. A little later in this episode, we're going to be speaking to food writer and content specialist Sophie McComas. But we're kicking things off with the best place to get started, in a chocolate factory.
So welcome to our home here. We're just walking past our beautiful wrappers. They're wrapping the thousands of chocolates that they wrap a day.
This isn't your standard chocolate factory. This is the Richmond-based home of a raw, organic, handmade product that has become a global business.
As you can see, there is chocolate everywhere. If it's one place you want to get locked up in, it's probably in here.
After many years in the hospitality industry, Panna Bourbanis decided to start his own business, making chocolate by hand and delivering the bars himself to his local suppliers on the back of his Vespa. Today, he's got over 4,000 suppliers worldwide and a business that turns over $10 million per annum. He's still got the Vespa and he's even hand-delivered chocolate to our studio for the interview. Thanks so much for coming in, Panna. What I wanted to talk to you about is your journey in building Panna Chocolate.
Thank you for inviting me here for starters, and great to hear you say it's chocolate versus chocolate, because I one of the inspirations was watching the movie Chocolate, and I looked into what organic chocolate there was out there, and even raw chocolate. The Panna chocolate is actually a raw chocolate, so all our ingredients are kept under a certain temperature. I actually jumped on a plane, went to Belgium for 2 days, and to the UK, worked with some chocolatiers over there, and then came back and locked myself in a commercial kitchen for about 6 months and created what we have today in Panna chocolate.
Most people sort of think, I'd love to work in food, but then they think, I'll go and get a job for someone who runs a food business. What made you take that next leap and go, actually, I love food, I will start my own food business?
Being from working class parents, I was driven from a young age that I wanted to be self-employed. I remember being 16, 17 and going and to the first franchise expos on my own just to see what business was all about. So I didn't know what business I was going to land on, but I just knew that I wanted to be self-employed, and that was one of my main drivers during my teenage years.
And what other areas of the hospitality and food industry did you work in before coming to chocolate?
It's going to test the memory now.
What didn't you work on?
No, look, started off in the first couple of years working with some major international franchises in fast food. Then I transitioned out into being self-employed in small takeaway businesses, and then moved on to cafes, set up restaurants in wineries. One of the last businesses I had before I transitioned to the chocolate was a catering business. We used to supply Melbourne Airport and a few other major businesses around Melbourne with pre-made food. I'm a big fan of the old artisanal trades of, you know, cobblers and chocolate making, all those artisanal, working with your hands and creating these magical experiences. And I watched the movie Chocolat, and a few days later I found myself holding a piece of chocolate and, just looked into it even further.
You had that inspiration to start a chocolate company. Yep. How did you actually go about it? How did you fund it?
It's interesting. In the past, previous businesses, I've always entering them with a different notion. I'd start a business and I'd be the last one that I'd look after. I would go in there, work, and I'd make sure that everyone else was paid, that the business was comfortable before I even paid myself a salary. With a chocolate, when I decided to go into it, I thought, I put a sum of money up front, and what I did, even though it was a nominal wage, I paid myself a wage from day one. So even in development stage, I was taking something home every week, and that just made me accountable.
Yeah,
and really, it's to this day, it's one of the most solid things I've done. And it took me about 4 or 5 months before I actually went to market with the chocolate. But, you know, paying myself the little wage, I was really responsible and accountable and treated myself as an employee before I treated myself as an owner, and the fact that I owned it was a bonus.
So how much money do you think you had to put in roughly probably to start?
Look, it was exactly under $100,000 at that time, and that was enough to get me started. And, you know, there was some cost that we, you know, cost us more to buy. And for example, you know, the packaging, our first lot of packaging would cost me 83 cents versus now costing, you know, well below 10 cents. And same supplier, mind you, 6 years, and great journey it's been. And
economies of scale are helping.
Absolutely. And that's what it was. And, you know, it was just a conversation with him. Okay, I'll buy that because I could only bought 12,000 boxes for the first order. Now we order 1 million at a time and multiple times a year.
What's the business like now in terms of size?
You know, July 2012, I think I was up to about 22 stores where I couldn't make and deliver and keep up with the demand, to now finding ourselves with just a bit over 60 full-time employees, a reach of about 25 countries, close to 5,000 outlets in Australia that stock us alone.
And what sort of turnover does the business have now?
We're up over that $10 million per annum now, and continuously growing, and we're about to launch a pan of chocolate ice cream as well.
Oh, that's
so
great
so
news.
So we're quite exciting, and but yeah, just forever growing, and now with being in the two biggest meat retailers of the country, we're looking at quite a substantial growth.
I think a few years ago you talked about being a bit reluctant to go into the big major supermarkets because you're worried about potentially, I guess, diluting your brand. Or how's your thinking changed on that?
It's a natural evolution of where the company's gone. And so the plan was to, you know, have as far reach as we can across a lot of retailers, you know, as the company grows, and we need that next level of fulfillment. As a company, we decided that it was time to enter. What that's done as well, it's assisted with the pull through and the brand awareness.
When did Panna go digital, and how much of the business is run online?
Yeah, look, we started with digital immediately, but not a huge focus. In 2013, we opened a couple of retail stores. The first one was in Richmond in Melbourne, which we believe was one of the first raw vegan dessert stores in the world. And we really were innovators, and we were creating desserts that sort of were next level in this space and using some of the most amazing ingredients. And that imagery really helped and assisted us in being able to have content for the, especially on the social media platforms. Mm-hmm. And that really brought on a huge engagement globally, because we know it's far reaching. I think now we're about 280,000 people on Instagram, followers on Instagram alone.
The website for Panna Chocolate is just beautiful, and it's got a lot of content on there. Can you tell us about the brand experience for your customers and what you've tried to do with your online presence for Panna Chocolate?
The way I always approach things, and especially when it comes to team members, hire experts. Hire people that know their area better than you do. So it starts with that from my experience. And then it's just consideration for every touch point. Not only do we look at a touch point for the chocolate as a box, but also every point, every stage that a customer interacts, it needs to be considered rather than just creating something and putting it there. So lots of thought, lots of time is really important to us to create that whole brand experience right through.
It seems like relationships are very important to you from having the same packaging company right from the start.
I generally like to treat people the way I want to be treated. So it's important that we all go on the journey together, and we all need to be commercial without a doubt. So it's about respecting where a company, not only myself, but where they might be, but also understanding what is the scalability, what is the value of the proposition for us to purchase larger quantities of any product or any of our extensions as time goes on, as we grow. And, you know, just valuing where they are as a business and where we're at and how we can work together.
What about your relationships with your customers? How do you build that relationship?
Yeah. We've got an amazing team out in the field. We've got, I think, 10 to 13 people out in the field who interact face-to-face with a lot of our stores, our organic stores and our independents. And then social media is, you know, with between all the platforms, over 300,000 followers is another way of where we engage a lot. And trade shows was heavily focused at the beginning. We did a lot of business-to-consumer trade shows, so it was a lot of interaction and feedback and conversations there as well.
Panna, what's the best lesson you've learned along the way?
Really understand what you want, trying not to deviate too much from that, because you get a lot of outside influence. you know, really early on in the piece, I should do this, I should do that, because there's so much, you know, history in the marketplace with a product. Well, if we all did the same, we're all going to be competing in the same space. So for myself, it was like, no, I think I'll go down this path, or I'll do this. And I've stuck to that. And I still, to this day, there's not been many steps that I haven't done that haven't been my decisions.
And what would be your advice to other entrepreneurs?
A very cliche line. It's just...
We don't mind a cliche.
Yeah, do what you love and you'll never work a day in your life.
Well, yes. If you own a chocolate company, I can definitely see that that would be the way. For Panna Barbonis, founder of Panna Chocolate, delivery of its delicious products started on the back of a Vespa in Melbourne. But now its product is enjoyed globally, thanks to one of its most powerful tools, its telco, and the support and technology Vodafone provides to help it succeed. Building your brand and having a professional online presence is easy, with the help of business apps available in Vodafone's suite of Ready Apps Marketplace. And as a Vodafone customer, you get a personal account manager when you have just 10 or more connections. To find out more on how Vodafone can help your business, go to vodafone.com.au/business.
ABN required, $300 limit per month, billed monthly by Vodafone, T's and C's apply.
We've been speaking with Panna Barbonis about building Panna Chocolate and how he's maintained the core values of his brand as his business has gone global. Joining me now is former food journalist and owner of digital agency Buffet, Sophie McComas.
Thanks for having me.
Sophie, Panna's been very savvy in the way he and Panna Chocolate have used social media. Have you got any tips along the way that you'd give to other businesses about using social media to build a brand?
Definitely. I think having your own voice and your own visual style is really important. We are just overcome by content every day, and building something that is instantly recognizable as a Panna photo or a kind of visual style that's unique to your brand is absolutely so important. When you look at Panna's imagery, there's a lot of hands kind of holding it up to cameras, almost as if the camera has taken a bite out of it itself. That's something that's really unique to that brand that they've consistently put out there, is those kinds of images. Without even reading the name of who's putting that photo up there, you know it's a Panna photo. And I think that's really important, whether your brand is, you know, in the health space, or if it's, you know, pasta or a drink or something like that, making sure that your imagery has a unique style. And also making sure that your voice is true to your brand. Your brand personality should be at the core of every photo you take, every line of copy that you write.
How difficult is it to build a brand up through social media in these days where organic growth is so much more difficult and there's a lot of pay to play around with social media?
We've seen a lot of change with the algorithms in the last year or so, where paying is really part and parcel of your strategy as a new brand. Just constantly look at the data and see what's working and see what people are responding to, because there's no point if no one's seeing anything, no one's engaging. Time to switch tack.
And so how important is delving into that data, and what's the best ways to go about it?
You can really drill down into what's the most engaged with posts, your reach metrics as well. It's important to look at what's not gone well. I think that's what people kind of forget about. They're like, oh, look how amazing this post went. It just went crazy. But it's really important to see what wasn't working as well. So you can kind of, you know, adjust your strategy as needed there.
Is there any out-of-the-box advice or that you give to your clients in terms of doing things differently?
I guess not scheduling everything is a point that we try to put out there. You've got to be really flexible with social media as well. You've got to jump on things as they happen. Insta stories are so important now. It's one of the fastest growing way that people are ingesting content. So I think you can't schedule your month's worth of content and then just kind of let it go. You really have to be alive within your channel, all your channels. You have to respond to comments. You have to ask questions of your audience. You have to really be a living, breathing part of your brand's communications. Otherwise, it just feels stale.
Sophie, Panna's built an amazing website and uses social media really cleverly, and it's got quite a digital footprint. What tips do you have for businesses building a digital presence?
One thing that's so exciting about Panna's digital presence as a whole, is that you kind of get a similar experience through all their channels. So on their website, they've got a great journal there where they talk about recipes, they do collaborations, they launch new products, they have news, they talk about tips for, you know, being environmentally conscious. They're really building a richer world there where people can find out more about their brand rather than just buying product. And I think that's having that space to storytell, to talk to your audience, to explore different avenues of your product is really important for a business. Panna is really great because they're not salesy at all, actually, in their communications. Mm-hmm. They're just saying, look at these layers, look at this texture, look at this color. And it kind of draws you in without needing to say, it's 50% off, or it's only, you know, $12, or find it in the supermarket. You're almost drawn to it just because of how delicious it looks and how vibrant it is and how exciting it kind of feels to look at that product.
Panna Chocolate's really taken off as it's growing from a small business to quite a big business now. What about at the opposite end of the spectrum of those businesses starting out? What advice do you give to people making those first steps?
It's so important for a new brand to not look at a similar brand in that category and be like, well, they're doing it, that works, I'll just do exactly the same thing. Otherwise, you're just scrolling, and you just see it, something that you've seen before, and it'll just go past. I think people really connect to something that feels fresh and feels new and feels authentic. If you really put the time in at the start of the growth of your brand to figure out who you are, almost if your brand was a personality, what do they say? What don't they say? What values do they have? What kind of person are they? If you really craft that at the beginning of your brand and create a kind of world around everything you do that constantly speaks back to that, then you'll really cut through the noise.
Thank you to my guest today, food content specialist Sophie McComas and chocolatier Panna Bourbanis. And Panna, thank you so much for leaving us with as much chocolate as we could get our hands on. You are welcome back any day. On the next episode, we'll hear from a business owner who has built a bridge between the construction and design industries. I'm Cara Waters, and this has been the Bold Businesses Podcast, powered by Vodafone.